We're Lancer Radio, streaming live at lancerradio.org, and you're at Over Coffee with Dot Cannon. On Japan's island of Shikoku are 88 Buddhist temples, and for more than 1,200 years, the Japanese have undertaken a pilgrimage that involves visiting each of these sites. There are a lot of different reasons why people make this pilgrimage, but the main purpose is enlightenment. And after losing her university job in 1998, Japan Times columnist Amy Chavez also decided to make the Shikoku pilgrimage, but she did it in a unique way. She did it as a long-distance runner running the 900 miles, and she wrote about her experiences and published them in her new book, Running the Shikoku Pilgrimage, 900 Miles to Enlightenment. At the LA Times Festival of Books, she talked about that experience. Amy, take me back in your imagination to taking that pilgrimage, would you, and tell me about your very best day and one of your most challenging.
My best day, it happens late in the book, and it's when I think finally my body has accustomed itself to the abuse I was giving it. And I learned enough about the metaphysical aspects of the pilgrimage to understand how to do a bit of mind control with myself. And one of the tasks that was presented with me just after I had finished the awakening, I had gotten a call on my cell phone that my neighbor, next door neighbor, had died. And so I went back for the funeral. He was a 74-year-old man. And when I went then to go back down to the pilgrimage after, you know, just one night at home, my next door neighbor, she said, would you please do me a favor and pray for him, since he just died, to help him reach enlightenment in his death. And that's like a big responsibility. I had no idea, but it is. And so you have to help this person get to what they call the other shore. So that means every temple you go to, you have to pray specifically for them, keep them in your mind and in your heart the whole time. And so I came to a point when it was around Temple 80 when I felt I had done my job, that I had done all I could do to help him reach enlightenment, and I metaphysically handed him over to the Buddha. And it was kind of an amazing experience. So that was the best day, is when I'd come to terms with all this stuff and I was feeling really good about everything. And then the worst day happened just after that. Which again, you know, life is like this. Just when you think you've got something, then it, you know, another curveball is thrown. Can you deal with it, you know? So, and that was when I got a free place to stay at a Zen school. And I was really looking forward to the meditation session in the morning. And it was at 4 a.m. and, you know, they came and they woke me up and I went into this Zen, you know, I mean, they're all monks and some kids also training to be monks. And it was just like hell for 4 hours of physical, like, meditation. It's not like just sitting there, right? Like, they were getting, like, standing up and then getting down on the floor and kowtowing, you know, and up and down 100 times. And, you know, then there was just sitting meditation, but even that can be very difficult if you're not used to doing it for, you know, a lengthy period of time. And then after that, we had breakfast, which was just, I mean, it was like rice and some really kind of tepid soup, which I could hardly eat, you know, but I had to. And I was just so ready to get out of there. And then that's when I realized that, you know, I've got a ways to go before I get to enlightenment.
What happens after you finish a 900-mile pilgrimage? What was your last day like, and where do you go from there?
Well, in the cosmic ways of the pilgrimage, it was only fitting that I ended up meeting up with several other people that I had met on the pilgrimage throughout it. And this is the funny thing about the pilgrimage, is weird things happen. And there I was on the last day, and I ended up seeing 5 people, separate people that I had run into throughout the pilgrimage, you know, as everyone was, you know, on different days and stuff, but we crossed paths. And all those people suddenly were there. And we did the last 20 miles of the pilgrimage together. No, that's wrong. The last 20 kilometers of the pilgrimage together. So that was really special. And then, of course, the thing is you've been on this pilgrimage for, you know, in my case, it took me 31 days to run it, but 5 weeks in total because I took some days off to rest. And you've just been out on the street, hanging out on the side of the road for you know, 5 weeks, and suddenly your goal has been accomplished, and you're like, what do I do now? So this is the time, and I think it happens for most people who do the whole pilgrimage at one time, is it that's the moment when you say, I want to do it again.
So when are you going to?
Well, I have done it again, not all at once like I did before. A lot of people do it in stages or go down and, you know, like the problem is getting 5 to 6 weeks off, you know, of a job or school to go down and do it. So I've bicycled parts of it, and I've gone in a car for parts of it, and I did 1 through 17, temples 1 through 17 a couple years ago. I try to get down there every spring and do a part of it again. Yeah.
What would you most like people to get from your book? Most of us are probably not going to be taking a 900-mile run, but what would you most like people to understand spiritually from what you've written?
Well, I suppose the great thing is that, you know, no one really has to do the 900 miles. They can just read the book. And like we talk about, you know, doing things virtually these days, I suppose by reading a book, then you're doing it virtually, aren't you? I think that one thing is probably preconceptions. I've never been a religious person, and I was a bit fearful of this because it's a Buddhist pilgrimage, and I thought, oh no, you know, they're going to try to sell me on Buddhism now and this and that. But it's not like that at all. You just take from it what you want to get out of it. And I suppose the biggest thing for me is that, you know, so often we live our lives in our own little microcosm because we're so concerned about what we have to do the next day or what we have to do next week. And we're setting everything up for ourselves to get to this appointment on time and do this and that. And even teaching at the university was relying on me to show up, to teach well, and the students, you know, had evaluations of the teachers and all these things. But once I get onto the pilgrimage doesn't care whether I show up or not. It doesn't care about my teaching skills. So suddenly you're confronted with something where it's not about you anymore at all. It's about, okay, here's this pilgrimage, and what can I learn from it? What can I take away from it? What does it want to teach me?
And what did yours want to teach you? How is Amy, with whom I'm speaking today, different from Amy prior to this?
Well, because I lost my job, of course, I had started looking for another job immediately. And it was not the hiring time of the year, so it was difficult. Well, actually impossible to find a job. But what happened was that on the pilgrimage, I realized that, you know, I didn't need a job. I was already writing, and I wasn't making a lot of money, but I realized that, you know, I can make it on that salary. And if I do that, then I'll have a better life. It'll be a simpler life, but I'll have a better life because I won't have, you know, a boss. I won't have to go in and, you know, put in the long hours. And I realized that I could be pretty happy with just a really nice life on my own terms.
Amy, thank you for your time today.
Thank you.